Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Friday. It's January 22nd. I'm your reader, Bob Young. The Courier forecasts clouds and sun, and much colder today, with a high of only 15 degrees, winds from the northwest between 6 and 12 miles per hour. We'll get down to minus 3 degrees this evening under mainly clear skies, with wind from the east between 3 and 6 miles per hour. As we look around the region, times of clouds and sun today, mainly clear tonight, some sunshine giving way to clouds tomorrow, breezy in the afternoon, Sunday considerable cloudiness, and Monday expect snow. Looking at our lead stories on the front page, bill gives lawmakers more say on university spending, court upholds mother's murder conviction in baby's Sterling case, interest in vaccine outpacing supplies, and we begin with vaccine spread thin in Iowa. Iowa's vaccine distribution prepares for second phase, but demand will outweigh supply at first. Story filed by Aaron Murphy, and begins with a photograph of a healthcare preparing a vaccine injection. Johnston, hundreds of thousands more Americans are about to become eligible to receive the COVID-19 vaccine, but demand for the vaccine will outweigh supply early in the process, state officials said Thursday. Iowa will begin the second phase of its vaccination program the week of February 1st, at which time Iowans who work in law enforcement, emergency response, K-12 education, and child care will become eligible to receive the vaccine, as will any Iowans ages 65 or older. However, the number of newly eligible Iowans, more than 660,000, the state estimates, will outnumber the number of vaccine doses available, according to state officials who asked for patients from the public. Quote, "You can see this is no small undertaking," Governor Kim Reynolds said Thursday during a news conference at Iowa PBS Studios. Quote, "Iowans will need to be patient. The vaccines will be coming. It's just going to take some time," unquote. The state is completing the first phase of vaccination rollout, which Reynolds acknowledged has been going slower than expected. She said an insufficient allotment of vaccine doses has slowed the process of getting vaccines to nursing homes and other long-term care facilities. Reynolds said she has been assured the first doses for that first phase will be completed by the end of the month, with the second doses required to be administered 3 or 4 weeks after the first. That means the first phase would be totally complete by the end of February. Reynolds said the state receives roughly 19,500 vaccine doses per week and immediately distributes those to ensure they get to Iowans as quickly as possible. She said Iowa is receiving fewer doses per population than most states and is working with the state's congressional leaders to learn why. Reynolds and U.S. Representative Cindy Axne, Democrat of Iowa, spoke Wednesday morning about Iowa's vaccine allotment. Axne pledged to seek answers from President Joe Biden's administration. Quote, "I believe that Iowa should have an increased allocation of the COVID-19 vaccine because it's unacceptable that Iowa is getting only 1% of the weekly national supply," Axne said in an emailed statement. Quote, "Iowa has among the oldest populations of any state, and we have thousands of at-risk Iowans, both in our nursing homes and in other congregate living, and we need to get them vaccinated as soon as possible, as well as keep us on track to begin vaccinating Iowa's working population to ensure we get our economy back on track and children safely back in school." Reynolds said despite that slow rollout of the first phase, the state will begin the second phase in February. She said the prospect of new vaccines coming to the market and working with a new federal administration could boost the number of doses allotted in the coming weeks. Quote, "It's going to take some time. There's just not a lot of doses being allocated," she said. The second phase of the state's vaccine distribution plan is broken into 5 tiers. The first tier includes all Iowans 65 years or older, plus workers in law enforcement, emergency response, K-12 education, and child care. The second tier includes workers in food processing, manufacturing, agriculture, and other essential jobs where social distancing at work is difficult. The second tier also includes any Iowans living with disabilities in home settings. The third tier includes any workers in congregate settings not covered by the previous tier, and state lawmakers and state government staff at the Iowa State Capitol. The fourth tier includes health and safety inspectors, and the fifth tier includes staff and inmates at correctional facilities. Quote, "We know everyone wishes this would move faster," Kelly Garcia, interim director of the State Public Health Department, said during the news conference. Quote, "The demand for this phase is tremendous and supply remains constrained," unquote. Iowans who will soon become eligible to receive the vaccine will be notified by a number of possible sources, most likely their employer, local pharmacy, or local public health department. State public health officials said they will also announce additional information about when Iowans can get the vaccine through the media and via state social media accounts. The next story about the vaccine is filed by Amy Rivers. Interest in vaccine outpacing supplies. Hospitals. Curiosity is high in Black Hawk and Bremer counties. Waterloo. Iowa's governor released new information on who will be eligible for the next round of COVID-19 vaccinations. Hospitals in Black Hawk County are facing a crush of people asking one question in particular. When will they be able to get vaccinated? That's the biggest question and reason people are calling us, according to Unity Point Health Waterloo spokesperson Carson Tiggs. But the answer, as states continue to get much smaller allocations of vaccine than they were promised from the federal government, is wholly unsatisfying. Quote, "Our answer is basically, we anticipate the vaccine will be available to the general public later this year," Tiggs said. Governor Kim Reynolds on Thursday announced that hundreds of thousands more Iowans will be included in the vaccine's second phase, known as Phase 1B, but there is still too little supply to complete the first phase. Because of the shortage, the Black Hawk County Health Department is still working through Phase 1A vaccinations. That includes healthcare workers at Unity Point, Mercy One, Waterloo, and People's Community Health Clinic in Waterloo. Nursing home residents and staff began receiving vaccinations in late December and early January, and paramedics and firefighters have also received their first doses. The same is true in Bremer County, said Heidi Solheim, chief operating officer at Waverly Health Center, though providers are receiving lots of inquiries from people wanting to sign up to receive the shot. Quote, "At this time, we are not collecting names or starting registrations for the vaccine because we don't have any information on how much or when we will actually receive it," she said. Even so, providers like Dr. Vandana Jain, a doctor at Mercy One Waterloo Cancer Center, are lending their voices to Mercy One's information videos on the COVID-19 vaccine in both English and Spanish, making sure that when the supply does catch up, demand will be there as well. Quote, "I think it is extremely important that people be vaccinated," Jane said in a release from Mercy One. Quote, "We need to reach herd immunity, and if people don't get vaccinated, we will not reach herd immunity until hundreds of thousands of more people die in the U.S., unquote. More than 272,000 Iowans have had coronavirus since testing began in the state in March, and nearly 4,500 have died, 242 of those in Black Hawk County alone. Quote, "I have had family and patients who have died of COVID," Jane said. "We aren't doing this for ourselves. We are doing this for our parents and grandparents. We can't be caring society unless we take care of others." Quote, "It will take time," noted Joan Lang, a clinical nurse specialist at Mercy One Waterloo, noting, "Until then, people should stay diligent with wearing our masks, hand sanitizing, and maintaining our distance." Court upholds mother's murder conviction and baby Sterling case. Stories filed by Jeff Reinitz and begins with a photograph of Cheyenne Renee Harris. Alta Vista. The Iowa Court of Appeals has upheld the murder conviction of a former Alta Vista woman accused of starving her infant son to death. Cheyenne Renee Harris argued that her trial attorney should have pursued a diminished responsibility, or intoxication defense, that she wasn't able to form the specific intent to commit the crime. At trial, the defense presented testimony from a clinical psychologist that Harris suffered from major depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and substance abuse, but the testimony didn't rise to the level needed for such defenses. In a decision issued Thursday, the Iowa Court of Appeals affirmed Harris's conviction. Harris's four-month-old son, Sterling, was found dead in a maggot-infested diaper in a swing seat in the back bedroom of the Alta Vista apartment where they lived in August 2017. An autopsy determined he died of dehydration, malnutrition, and infection from untreated diaper rash. Experts testified that larvae growing in his diaper showed it hadn't been changed for more than a week prior to his death. A Plymouth County jury in Lamar's found Harris guilty of first-degree murder and child endangerment causing death at a February 2019 trial. Now 23 years old, Harris is serving a life sentence in the Iowa Correctional Institute for Women in Mitchellville. The child's father, Zachary Cohen, who also lived in the apartment, was also found guilty of murder and child endangerment during a trial in 2018 and sentenced to life in prison. His appeal was dismissed in November 2020. Bill gives lawmakers more say on region spending. Stories filed by Vanessa Miller of the Cedar Rapids Gazette, and begins with a photograph of Representative Phil Thompson. The state's public universities could not spend millions of dollars in federal grants, private gifts, and other sources unless state lawmakers give their permission each year, according to a measure advancing in the Iowa legislature. House Study Bill 66 cleared an education subcommittee Thursday. The measure would bar the state's public universities from spending any non-state money, quote, unless the expenditure is approved by an act of the General Assembly, unquote. It would apply to the University of Iowa, including its health care system, Iowa State University, the University of Northern Iowa, and Regents Special Schools, beginning in July 2022. Lobbyists from all three of the campuses opposed the proposal, but Representative Phil Thompson, Republican of Jefferson, during the subcommittee meeting, said he supports discussing it further, saying he's aware of lawmakers who want more input on campus spending. Quote, in the interest of continuing to drive conversations about the budget, I'm willing to sign on to this bill, unquote, Thompson said. Again, I just want to increase conversations. I'm concerned that there's no recourse for the legislature on the backside as opposed to just responding to what spending has happened, unquote. Under the proposed bill, the universities, via the Board of Regents, annually by January 15th, would have to submit the General Assembly and Governor a report detailing the nature and amount of non-state monies received or expected to be received for expenditure in the following fiscal year. The report would have to spell out, quote, each proposed expenditure of non-state monies in the following fiscal year by the Board and each institution governed by the Board, according to HSB 66. The proposal comes a year after the UI entered a groundbreaking partnership allowing for private operation of its massive utility system. The $1.165 billion deal aimed at carving out a new revenue source for a campus facing enrollment declines, state funding cuts, and rising costs, enabled the UI to invest $999 million in an endowment it hopes will generate interest annually in support of campus initiatives. Republican Governor Kim Reynolds praised the deal, saying it could be a roadmap for similar ventures in the future. The UI created a three-member board to decide how much money to withdraw annually and how to allocate it. Administrators also crafted a process inviting people on campus to apply for grants for projects supporting strategic goals. Lawmakers during Thursday's meeting didn't discuss that specific UI revenue stream or this year's Board of Regents request for restoration of $8 million cut over the summer, plus another $18 million boost in general education funding for fiscal 2022. Lobbyists for the region's schools told legislatures that non-state money sources are numerous and fluid and often tied to research that changes throughout the year. Jennifer Harbison, a representative from UI Healthcare, noted during Thursday's discussion that UI Healthcare is self-supporting, aside from the Carver College of Medicine, and does not rely on legislative funding. Requiring the enterprise to get state approval for non-state spending would be cumbersome at best, Harbison said. At worst, it would obstruct UIHC's ability to operate, conduct medical research, and fundraise. Quote, it isn't as if all of the funding comes in a nice, neat package at one point in time, she said. Quote, we're applying and being awarded grants for research throughout the year, and sometimes there are federal budget cuts, and so things are also changed throughout the year, unquote. Harbison asked how lawmakers perceive this bill affecting day-to-day operations, and university lobbyists asked how such specific legislation oversight might affect their campus's ability to fundraise and make commitments to honor donor intentions. Representative Mayor Masher, Democrat of Iowa City, echoed concern about how upping red tape might hamstring the campus's progress on local, national, and global issues. Quote, why would we handicap our regent institutions that are working on COVID research, working on all of those, plus that we don't even know about? She asked. We're hurting our own industry, the cattle industry, the hog industry, the chicken industry, unquote. Regent lobbyists noted that years of budget, facilities, and research reports are online, along with hundreds more documents spelling out spending and revenue approvals. They urged lawmakers to make sure what they're looking for doesn't already exist. Quote, if all you want is information, it's there, Masher said. Do we trust our regents? They're appointed by the governor, and they have to be approved by the Senate. So either we trust them to do the job that they are basically appointed to do, or we don't. Turning to the Cedar Valley page now, longtime Buchanan County Sheriff passes the torch, filed by Kristen Guess, and begins with a photograph with the caption, Buchanan County Deputy Scott Buzinski Center is sworn in as sheriff on December 30th at the Buchanan County Courthouse with his son, Ian Buzinski, left, and his wife, Amy Buzinski, at the right. And they're standing in an office in front of a desk with the American flags seen behind them. Independence. Longtime Buchanan County Sheriff Bill Wolfgram has retired after 31 years of law enforcement service. Elected in 2004, Wolfgram served four terms as the Buchanan County Sheriff following 15 years of service as a deputy for the county. Quote, it was truly an honor and a privilege serving as Buchanan County Sheriff for the past 16 years. I certainly appreciate all the encouragement and support from the public and from my staff, he said. Wolfgram passed the torch to former Deputy Scott Buzinski, who was sworn in as Buchanan County Sheriff for the next 4 years. Buzinski, who has worked with Wolfgram for 25 years, said he looks forward to building upon the progress left by outgoing Sheriff Wolfgram. From bag phones with cords to portable laptops, Wolfgram has seen firsthand how law enforcement has evolved with technology. He has assisted with upgrades across the department, from basic radios to the 911 community response system, and transitioned inmates into a newly constructed jail. He's driven squad cars ranging from 8-cylinder to mid-sized all-wheel drive vehicles. He also helped national news sources like Good Morning America and Entertainment Tonight set up internet connectivity when reporters flocked to the rural town when former reality TV star Chris Solis was arrested in 2017. Interacting with his community on a daily basis has been a highlight for Wolfgram, who taught the DARE program through the Independence Area Schools for 29 years. Through it all, the closeness of his community has been unwavering. Many members of Buchanan County law enforcement grew up in the communities they now serve. Quote, we know who our neighbors are and we care, he said. He will continue to drive school and charter buses part-time as he has for more than 30 years. Bozinski, a Fairbank native, served as an officer on the Independence Police Department from 1995 to 2001, before serving as a Buchanan County Sheriff's Deputy from 2001 to 2020. Since he was a child, Bozinski has wanted to be part of law enforcement. Quote, "As time goes on, you set different goals to obtain throughout your career. Being a sheriff was definitely one of them," he said. Bozinski said he plans to implement a paid reserve program with the sheriff's office within the next few years. "You can never have enough law enforcement," he said. A reserve staff would help cover shifts and relieve deputies of stringent work schedules. Quote, "You don't realize how much a sheriff does. Paperwork, day-to-day duties, the jail, office, dispatch. There's a lot more to it than a person thinks," he said. In the public safety roundup, Cedar Falls, police are investigating a shooting that injured one person late Wednesday. A man was sitting in a car with his wife in the 2400 block of Olive Street around 10:15 p.m. when someone opened fire, according to Cedar Falls police. The man was struck in his upper body, and paramedics took him to a local hospital for treatment. Officers said they believe he will survive his injuries. The identity of the victim hasn't been released. The man's wife wasn't injured. Police said the shooting appears to be an isolated incident and the public isn't in danger. A Waterloo man was arrested for allegedly firing a shotgun into the ground during an argument Wednesday. Waterloo police arrested James Leon Ware, 44, of 1241 South Street for misdemeanor reckless use of a firearm. He was released from jail pending trial. Neighbors called 911 around 9 a.m. Wednesday after noticing an argument outside of Ware's home, according to court records. During the dispute, Ware allegedly retrieved a shotgun and fired once into the ground. The other person involved in the argument left, and no injuries were reported. Westgate woman and son rescued from fire. Westgate. Authorities pulled a Westgate woman and her son to safety after her house caught fire early Thursday. Westgate Fire and Ambulance and Fayette County Sheriff's deputies were called to the blaze at 105 Pearl Street around 1:15 a.m. They found Miranda Steinbrunn and her 6-year-old son trapped in an upstairs bedroom, according to fire officials. Firefighter Eric Wolf assembled a rescue team and removed the mother and child with the help of Deputy Christina Thayer. The residents were treated at the scene and released. It appeared the fire started with a candle in a bathroom. The flames then spread to the walls. Smoke alarms woke the family. Maynard Fire and American Red Cross assisted. Mental health exam sought an abduction. Waterloo. The attorney for a Waterloo man accused of grabbing a child outside a store in August is asking the court for a mental health evaluation for his client. Eduardo Cano Gonzalez, 25, is in the Blackhawk County Jail awaiting trial for charges of child stealing, first-degree harassment, interference, false imprisonment, and assault on an officer. On Tuesday, defense attorney Thomas McEntee told the court Cano takes medication for paranoid schizophrenia and has been unable to assist in his own defense. McEntee asked the court for mental health evaluation to determine if Cano is competent to stand trial. Cano has been in jail since August 16th, when he allegedly removed a 10-year-old boy from Independence Liquor and Food on Independence, Iowa, and began to walk off with him. As family members and others inside the store tried to stop him, the child escaped. Cano struggled with officers when they arrived. He told police the child was his younger brother and was in danger because of illegal activity in the store. According to court records, he said he was going to walk the boy home. Daycare owner allegedly injured tot. Sumner, filed by the Associated Press. The owner of a Northeast Iowa child care facility has been arrested and charged with child endangerment after being accused of injuring a 1-year-old in her care, police said. An employee reported Crystal Baugh, 54, of Sumner, to authorities. Baugh owns and operates Crystal's Christian Child Care in Sumner. The facility's operations have been suspended while authorities investigate. University of Northern Iowa Union seeks to restore faculty contract in initial bargaining. Stories filed by Andrew Wind. Cedar Falls. The University of Northern Iowa Faculty Union still wants to restore items removed from its contract 4 years ago after a change in state law. Administration officials still say they don't have to talk about it. United Faculty made the pitch Thursday during a virtual initial bargaining session on behalf of the more than 600 full and part-time employees and adjuncts it represents. Quote, "We call on you to join public employers from all across the state, large and small, urban and rural, Democratic and Republican, who have chosen to maintain or restore the now permissive contract topics established through years of dialogue, consensus building, and negotiation," Becky Hawbaker, United Faculty President, said in presenting the union's proposal. Quote, "Restoring this language still costs you nothing in dollars and cents, but buys you an increase in trust and morale at a time when faculty morale is low and stress is high." The Iowa Board of Regents, though, quote, "reserves its right to refuse to negotiate on non-mandatory subjects of bargaining," according to its written initial proposal. Michael Galloway, an attorney with Allers and Cooney of Des Moines, who represents the board, said UNI is offering a 1% wage increase applied to the existing contract during each of the next 2 years. A new contract would begin July 1st. United Faculty's proposal would expand the contract from 5 to 24 pages as it seeks to add back items stripped out when changes were made to state law, limiting public employees' collective bargaining. Many of those provisions became part of a new faculty handbook. But Hawbaker noted, quote, that a current or future administration could sweep this language away as well. As UNI prepares to search for a new provost, the protection of a contract is even more important, practically and symbolically, she added. Provost Jim Walpart announced last week he is leaving UNI in June to become president of Central Washington University. Hawbaker outlined how faculty salary increases have been outpaced by inflation and the consumer price index over more than a decade, as well as impacts by other factors such as growth in employee insurance costs. She called for a boost in the minimum base salary, now ranging from $42,351 for an instructor to $68,245 for a full professor. It would raise to a range of $43,000 to $68,329 under the proposal. The union also proposed expanding contract guidelines to include minimum salary reference points in the 5-year increments going up to 25 years. At the top of that range, an instructor would be paid $67,286 next year and a full professor to $94,502. In 2022-2023, year two of the proposal, the table shows a 1.5 increase across the board. Quote, "We also propose a reasonable increase of 7% to the rate paid to our most vulnerable and marginalized faculty, our adjuncts," said Hawbaker. For probationary term, renewable term, and tenured faculty, a 3% wage increase was proposed in each of the next 2 years. That money would be divided up for across-the-board, incremental, and individual increases. Language was also proposed in the contract supporting tenure and non-tenure track faculty. For the third year, a state lawmaker has introduced a bill to eliminate tenure protections at Iowa's public universities. Quote, "We continue to be grateful for the board's opposition to the legislative assault on tenure, but call on you to put that support in writing and in the contract," said Hawbaker. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Friday, January 22nd, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Richard M. Rick Copps, 71, of Denver, Iowa, passed away on Saturday, January 16th, 2021, at Unity Point Allen Memorial in Waterloo. Rick was born on November 26, 1949, in Mason City, Iowa, the son of Shirley and Ruby, maiden name Peterson, cops. He graduated from Mason City High School in 1968. Rick served in the United States Army from March 28, 1969, until his honorable discharge on March 1, 1971. Rick was united in marriage to Hwa Suk Kim on December 18, 1971, in Mason City. Rick graduated from the University of Northern Iowa in 1977. He retired from John Deere Engine Works on February 1, 2008, after 30 years. Rick enjoyed playing cards, fishing, and loved driving. For over 20 years, he traveled with friends to Canada for their annual fishing trips, and he also traveled with his family throughout the United States. His more recent travels with Hwa Suk to see their daughter, Tanya, took them abroad to many different countries. He was very proud of his daughter, Tanya, for her academic and professional achievements. Due to the pandemic, there will be no services at this time. Burial of his cremains will be held at a later date in Memorial Park Cemetery in Mason City. Memorials may be directed to the family. Online condolences may be left at www.kaisercorson.com. Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Denver is assisting the family, and their phone number is 319-984-5379. Cedar Falls. Mary Louise Wirtz, 92, of Cedar Falls, passed away on January 18, 2021, at her home. No services are planned for this time. Richardson Funeral Service is assisting the family, and the online guestbook may be found at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. Waterloo. Robert Charles Stewart, 78, passed away January 20th at Cedar Valley Hospice Home. A visitation will occur on Sunday, January 24th at 2 to 4 p.m. at Fredsville Lutheran Church in Dyke, followed by a funeral service Monday, January 25th at 11 a.m. Interment will occur at Elmwood Cemetery in Dyke. Military honors will be provided by the American Legion of Dyke. Memorials may be directed to Cedar Valley Hospice or the church. Richardson Funeral Service is assisting the family. Online condolences may be left at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. Virginia Lillian Finders Crowley, 92, a faithful servant of Jesus Christ, met her Savior face-to-face on January 20, 2021. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, January 25, 2021, at Crossroads Baptist Church in Ames. Visitation will be held for 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Burial will be held at 3 o'clock p.m. at Waterloo Memorial Park Cemetery in Waterloo. Due to COVID-19, social distancing and use of face masks will be required for the services. Born November 17, 1928, in Ferguson, Iowa, Virginia was the eldest daughter of Beulah May and James Bertram Burt Finders. She graduated from Iowa State Teachers College in Cedar Falls and married her lifelong love of more than 70 years, Robert Joseph Cowley, on June 15, 1951. She wore many hats as a missionary wife, mother, and teacher, while her husband served as a pilot in Africa for 35 years. She also served hundreds of international students at Iowa State University for 18 years through campus ministry. She helped them with English conversation skills, Bible studies, registering for classes, and whatever else was needed. When she wasn't playing and beating her grandkids at Rummikub or stirring up a few pies for visitors, she was active in some other forms of serving. She would want you to know the key to eternal life is this, quote, "Believe in the Lord Jesus Christ, and you will be saved," Acts 16:31. This drove her entire life's purpose. She will be dearly missed, wife, mother, grandmother, and great-grandma. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of the Adams Funeral Home, and online condolences may be left for Virginia's family at www.adamssoderstrom.com. Iowa Gun Rights Constitutional Amendment moves ahead at the Capitol. This story is filed by Rod Bossart and James Q. Lynch of the Courier Des Moines Bureau. Des Moines. Opponents of an amendment that would write the right to bear and keep arms in the Iowa Constitution said the language goes too far, but proponents pushed ahead with the proposal Thursday, saying the matter should be decided by voters. Quote, I believe some of our rights have been taken away from us for years. This restores that, said Senator Brad Zahn, Republican of Urbandale, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee and member of a subcommittee that voted 2-1 to approve Senate Joint Resolution 1, quote, ultimately, Iowans get to decide this, unquote. Republicans who control the legislature are working to pass a resolution in the exact form previously approved by the 88th Iowa General Assembly that meets the criteria spelled out to bring a constitutional amendment before voters in the 2022 general election. If adopted by voters, the state constitution would be amended by adding, quote, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The sovereign state of Iowa affirms and recognizes this right to be a fundamental individual right. Any and all restrictions of this right shall be subject to strict scrutiny, unquote. Iowa is one of six states without gun ownership rights specifically stated in its constitution. The proposal has drawn opposition for including a call for, quote, strict scrutiny of any legal analysis. The legal phrase would make it difficult for future state lawmakers to pass any laws that would seek to regulate gun ownership and could subject existing regulations to legal challenges. Quote, I view this as a radical and unnecessary, and it threatens our network of public safety laws that I think not only keep my family safe, but also my rights as a gun owner, said Tracy Kennedy, a mother of two children who moved to Iowa from Missouri, one of three U.S. states that with similar strict scrutiny provisions. However, Richard Rogers of the Iowa Firearms Coalition said the, quote, strict scrutiny language is designed as protection against future attempts by lawmakers to place restrictions on the right to own a gun. Quote, there's nothing radical about supporting the Second Amendment and the Bill of Rights, Rogers told subcommittee members. He noted 44 states have protections in their constitutions, but Iowa does not, making the state, quote, an outlier. Quote, this amendment does not require the most stringent test, and it will make it difficult to infringe upon these rights. That's actually a feature, not a bug, he added. Let's move it forward and let the people decide, unquote. Several speakers advocated using identical language to the U.S. Constitution's Second Amendment, which guarantees the right to bear arms, rather than joining Alabama, Louisiana, and Missouri in adopting the, quote, strict scrutiny language. Quote, I have no desire to ever be on a list with Alabama and Louisiana, said Senator Tony Bisignano, a Democrat of Des Moines, who voted against the bill in subcommittee. Quote, I don't see the boogeyman that obviously people that support this do. I think this takes us to a new level of uncertainty and extremism, and I don't think Iowa wants to be, unquote. However, Senator Jason Schultz, Republican from Schleswig, said he supports the language, which will restore and maintain fundamental freedom. Quote, the point of this is to restrict future gun control bills, he said. Quote, the rights have been taken away over the years, and we're putting them back to the point where they're supposed to be, unquote. Denise Kane did not see it that way, telling the virtual hearing, quote, once we open that can, we would have a hard time clamping it back down. This is going to open up for irresponsible, radical folks to access guns, and I think that's a very dangerous road to go down, so I ask you, please, do not advance this bill, unquote. Leslie Carpenter, an advocate for people with serious brain illnesses, told the subcommittee 79% of suicides in Iowa are gun deaths, and the number one way to prevent a suicide is removal of means, something the proposed amendment will not help achieve. Likewise, Amya Thornton, a 15-year-old who said she has been threatened by an adult with a gun, expressed concern the proposal under consideration would create the potential for more students with emotional or mental health issues to have easier access to a gun at a time when, quote, things are so tense politically, it's scary for us, she said. Across the rotunda in the House Public Safety Committee, a similar bill, House Study Bill 9, passed 13-6 on a party line vote. Quote, the proposed amendment shows reckless disregard for the gun violence that plagues so many people's lives, is morally bankrupt, and doesn't have anything to do with protecting freedom, said Representative Beth Wessel Crochell, a Democrat from Ames. Republicans also are proposing bills to eliminate background checks from gun permits, remove the requirement for a permit to carry a concealed handgun, and allow guns in schools, hospitals, child care centers, and courthouses, she said. The amendment would erect a, quote, iron wall around gun rights and could prevent background checks for gun purchases, remove the permit to carry requirement, and allow guns in schools, hospitals, and courthouses. If approved by voters, the amendment, quote, will likely take down every reasonable gun law on the books, unquote, because of the strict scrutiny requirement, she said. In a time of increased divisiveness, quote, we need to step back rather than rush to amend the state constitution, Wessel Crochell said. State Representative Steve Holt, Republican of Denison, the resolution sponsor, agreed that it is, quote, profoundly apparent in 2021 that freedom and liberty are fragile and under greater assault and at any time in our history. That's what makes the amendment critical, he said, to have a firewall around fundamental rights, including gun rights, in the Iowa Constitution. Iowa House rejects call for mandatory masks, story filed by James Lynch of the Courier's Des Moines Bureau, and it begins with a photograph of Representative Pat Grassley, Republican from New Hartford, who is chairman of the House Appropriation Committee at the state capitol in Des Moines. Des Moines, House Republicans have refused to adopt rules requiring face coverings at the capitol or to allow members to participate in committee meetings and floor votes from outside the state house during the coronavirus pandemic. Republicans who control the House and Senate said Thursday current protocols that recommend but don't require the people to wear face masks are working. Quote, I have seen very few people who are not either utilizing social distancing or wearing a mask, even when they are able to social distance, House Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican from New Hartford, said. However, Representative Brian Meyer, Democrat of Des Moines, warned, quote, it's only a matter of time before something happens, unquote. Already, a person reported testing positive for COVID-19 after being at the Capitol last week. Meyer applauded the Republican leaders for steps taken to accommodate legislators and the public in the process of creating legislation. Quote, but we are falling short, he said. Mayer offered a handful of amendments to require masks everywhere in the Capitol complex, or at least require them in House committee and subcommittee meetings. He also sought to change House rules to allow members to participate in meetings and vote telephonically or by other electronic means. Quote, we can do it better, Mayer said. We can allow for people to have comments. We can allow for members to vote remotely. We can allow for interested parties to come into this building and feel safe or go online and make their comments heard, unquote. In the end, his amendment was voted down and the session rules adopted without any of the measures he sought. House Resolution 3 was approved 55-35. Also Thursday, the Iowa Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO, filed an OSHA complaint against the legislative leadership for their, quote, reckless disregard for the safety of people who work and visit the Capitol. Quote, it appears they do not really care about the safety and well-being of everyone that comes into the Capitol, Charlie Wishman, Iowa Federation president, said about the lack of a mask mandate. Some state legislatures have enacted mandatory mask policies or have delayed their sessions because of COVID-19. GOP leaders said they hadn't seen the complaint, but stood by the protocols in place. The process we have in the Senate is working, Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer, Republican from Ankeny, said. Unlike House members, senators are allowed to participate virtually in legislative meetings and work in the chamber when needed, but otherwise can work from their office or home. Quote, we just have to continue to monitor, unquote. Although the House has rules that cover lawmakers' attire, for example, Grassley questioned whether a mask mandate would be enforceable. Quote, what would the recourse be, he said. What would they expect the state patrol to come in and remove a member of the public or a member of the caucus? If a member is not properly attired, he said, they would not be removed, but would not be recognized to speak on the House floor. In seeking the rule changes, Democrats pointed out that several government agencies, such as the Transportation Commission, conduct virtual meetings, including voting. The legislature's Administrative Rules Committee said the Legislative Council conducted meetings and voted remotely during the time between 2020's session and the current session. Courts are conducting virtual hearings, and businesses also have changed their procedures to allow people to work remotely to limit the spread of COVID-19, they said. A rule was changed to extend the time for representatives to cast their votes from 10 minutes to 20 minutes. Meyer sought to extend it to 30 minutes to allow people to travel to the Capitol if they chose to work from a remote location. Turning to the sports page, in college men's basketball, Hawkeyes go cold late. Hoosiers secure upset. Iowa City. All season opposing teams have struggled to even slow down an Iowa offensive attack that ranks as the most efficient in the country. Indiana finally cracked the code Thursday night. The Hoosiers held the number 4-ranked Hawkeyes without a field goal for 11 minutes in the second half and finally found an offense of their own to race to an 81-69 upset victory at Carver-Hawkeye Arena. Iowa, which lost at home for only the second time in the past 24 games, led for most of the first half and had a 9-point lead with 12 minutes remaining before falling apart. Jack Nunge speared a rebound with one hand and scored on a putback, finishing a 3-point play at the foul line to make it 53-44. Then the Hawkeyes failed to convert from the field for the next 11 minutes. But Iowa coach Fran McCaffrey actually was less concerned that his team scored a season low in points than the fact that the Hoosiers rolled up 50 points in the second half. He said the collapse in the final 12 minutes was a combination of a lot of things. Quote, our defense wasn't good, and our offense was a little bit stagnant, I thought, McCaffrey said. We were a little too reliant on Luka. We did get in the bonus, and we did out-rebound them, but our defense, no matter what we were in, was not good. Garza finished with 28 points and 12 rebounds to lead Iowa. Joe Weiskamp added 16 points and a career-high 12 rebounds, but he scored only 1 point in the second half. Despite the impressive stats, Garza took much of the blame for the loss on himself. Quote, I need to handle the double team better, he said. Quote, in the first half, I was able to survey it and get a couple of assists. I can't have that many turnovers. Four. I've got to be better than that, and I have been better than that, and I will be better than that, unquote. Most of all, McCaffrey just felt his team wasn't as locked in mentally as it needed to be. Quote, I think we need to understand a little bit better what this league is and the quality of teams we're going to face, he said. I thought we'd done a pretty good job of that so far, but they were tougher than we were tonight, which is disappointing. Weiskamp said perhaps he and his teammates started to feel a little too comfortable following a recent 5-game winning streak. Quote, there's a lot of buzz around our team and a lot of people telling us how good we are, but in the end we have to prove it, he said. After Nunge's 3-point play, Indiana star Trace Jackson Davis countered with 6 straight points and freshman Anthony Lee knocked down just his 6th 3-pointer of the season to tie the score at 53-53 with 9 minutes 21 remaining. Garza countered with 2 free throws after coaching Jackson Davis into his 4th foul, but another freshman, Jordan Geronimo, scored inside to tie it again. As the Hawkeyes struggled to do anything at the offensive end, the Hoosiers took control. Aljami Durham gave them the lead with an 18-foot jumper and Armin Franklin drilled a three from the right corner to make it 60-55, with 6:13 remaining. After what ended up being a 27-6 scoring run, much of it with Jackson Davis on the bench, Indiana had a 71-59 lead with about 2 minutes remaining. Joe Toussaint ended the Iowa field goal drought by scoring on a drive with a minute to go, but the Hoosiers finished things up at the foul line. After making just 9 of their first 21 free throws, they made 12 of 14 at the line during the stretch. Jackson Davis led the way with 23 points, with Rob Finnessy adding 18, Durham 14, and Franklin 11. Iowa had a whopping 46-32 advantage in rebounding, but after shooting 51.7% from the field and building a 37-31 halftime lead, it shot 26.5% in the second half. The Hawkeyes also made just 5 of 23 attempts from three-point range, getting nothing from 2 of their primary perimeter weapons. Jordan Bohannon, who had been brilliant in the Hawkeyes' 5-game winning streak, failed to score while going 0-9 from the field. The team's fourth leading scorer, C.J. Frederick, also failed to score, although he did not play in the second half because of a lower leg injury. McCaffrey said the Hoosiers didn't really do anything out of the ordinary against Bohannon, last week's Big Ten Player of the Week. Quote, "They did what everybody does," McCaffrey said. "They got up in his space and chased him around. He had a few in and outs early and just never got comfortable," unquote. The Hawkeyes now have an 8-day gap in the schedule before playing at Illinois next Friday. Quote, "We've got 12 big games left, and all of our goals are still out there and still possible," Garza said. Iowa's next scheduled game is next Friday at number 22 Illinois. Game time is 8 p.m. with television coverage provided by FS1. Iowa sophomore C.J. Frederick, who was considered questionable because of an injury coming into the game, played 13 minutes in the first half, but did not play again after that. Keegan Murray started the second half in his place. Quote, "He was not himself," Iowa coach Fran McCaffrey said of Frederick. Quote, "I think you could tell that. He has a lower leg injury that he's going to have to take some time to get better." UNI unveils new football schedule. Cedar Falls. Following the announcement by Indiana State that it was electing to not participate in the 2021 spring FCS football schedule, the Missouri Valley Football Conference was forced to revise its conference schedule. The original schedule had Northern Iowa opening at home against Illinois State on Friday, February 19th. The Panthers will still be at home on February 19th, but now UNI will face South Dakota State at a 7 p.m. kickoff. Currently, UNI's plan is to allow 15% of the UNI Dome's capacity to attend games, near 2,500 fans, with hopes some crowd restrictions could be lifted to allow more. The Valley was committed to each conference member playing an 8-game schedule, culminating with the FCS playoffs beginning April 24th. The new schedule has a built-in April 17th rescheduling date for games that potentially could be canceled or postponed due to COVID-19 protocols. UNI will play 4 home dates and 4 road games with the new schedule. In college wrestling, Iowa's Tony Cassiope has nothing to lose in upcoming heavyweight showdown filed by Steve Batterson, and it opens with a photograph of Tony Cassiope. Stepping onto the mat against the nation's top-ranked 285-pound wrestler Friday night, Iowa's Tony Cassiope has nothing to lose. At least that's how Hawkeye coach Tom Brands views Cassiope's match against the Golden Gophers' Gable Stevenson, a junior who carries a 53-2 career record into the 8 p.m. duel between Iowa and Minnesota in Minneapolis. The defending Big Ten champion and top seed for the 2020 NCAA championships before they were canceled last March handed the Iowa sophomore 2 of his 3 losses last season. Stevenson won a 7-5 decision during last season's duel between the teams and defeated him 9-4 at the Big Ten Championships, where Cassiope finished third. Brands said turning these numbers around against one of the country's premier competitors is an important next step for Cassiope. Quote, nothing to lose. He has nothing to lose. I don't know when we're going to step up and compete with this guy, but I would definitely be in the minority in the wrestling community when I say that we can go with this guy, Brand said. Quote, I have said it before and I'll keep saying it. I believe in our guy, but he's going to have to do some things that are ballsy. That's just how you're going to turn the tables here. Brands believes Cassiope has the ability to make that happen. But will he? It's a tall task when you go up against someone like that, Brand said. When they're trying to beat you as bad as they can beat you in front of a live television audience, you've got to step up. Does that put pressure on Tony Cassiope? I hope so. I hope so. Are we up for it? Without speaking for him, I believe in our guy, unquote. Friday's test is expected to be the first of four consecutive matches for Cassiope against opponents currently ranked in the top 10 nationally at 285 pounds. Iowa's next scheduled competition is January 31st, when second-ranked Michigan and 10th-ranked Illinois visit Carver-Hawkeye Arena. That day, Cassiope could find himself facing the Wolverines' second-ranked Mason Paris and the Fighting Illini's second-ranked Luke Lufman. A week later, 8th-ranked Tate Orndorff of Ohio State is a potential opponent for the Hawkeye heavyweight. Paris handed Cassiope his only other loss during a 20-3 season last year in a weight class where Big Ten wrestlers currently rank in the top 8 nationally. Cassiope entered the season with an objective of climbing the ladder after a third-place finish in the 2020 Big Ten Finals. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls The Courier for Friday, January 22nd. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And you may wish to stay tuned to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, which follows shortly. And thanks so much for listening today.